Hey everyone, it's Laura with the Geek Chic Elite podcast. How are you doing? How are you doing in this quarantine crazy world? Well, hopefully, like me and everyone else on the planet, you have watched Netflix's Tiger King, that crazy documentary series, sort of documentary series, about Joe Exotic and all those crazy characters, well, real life people, but kind of characters. I had the pleasure of speaking with Michael Frizzell, Joe Paradise, and Darren Davis, who are the creators of the Tiger King comic book, Infamous Tiger King, by Tidal Wave Productions. And the book comes out in June. I believe they said it comes out June 24th. And they were awesome. We talked about all things Tiger King, the process, the cover art, which is stunning, about some of their other work with Stormy Daniels and sort of becoming part of history. It is a great, great interview, and I want to thank them again for chatting with me for so long on a Sunday night. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Laura. I'm with the Geek Chic Elite podcast. I am speaking with the creators of the Tiger King comic. Two of the creators.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. So if you'd like to introduce yourselves.
I am Darren Davis. I am the publisher of Tidal Wave Productions and the creator of the infamous line of comic books. And to my right
is Michael Frizzell, and I'm the writer of this particular issue of Infamous.
Oh, perfect. And we do have Joe Paradise maybe coming on if he finds his way here. But, Michael, you've worked with Joe Paradise before on at least two books, Political Power, James Comey, and Female Force, Stormy Daniels. How did you come together for those books, and what was it like teaming up for this third time?
Always like working with Joe because he's got a lot of energy. And how we get together... Darren says, you guys need to work on a book together. And we jump on board and get started. This one came about, and I'm sure Darren will talk a little bit about it, but from an idea where he just messaged us on Messenger and said, hey, would it be crazy to do this? And Joe was immediately on board, and I had to fess up. I hadn't seen the show yet at that point. And but because Joe was on board, enthusiastic, and Darren seemed like it was a good, bad idea, great time. I thought, why not? So, yeah, it's always fun to pair up with Joe.
I always
Maybe because his name is off of Joe that it worked out.
Yeah, because we always come up with the best, worst ideas. And so That literally is how the Stormy Daniels comic came up. I think we did it about a year ago, the first edition. Mm-hmm. We did the Stormy Daniels one, and we're like, and Joe came up, and we're like, going, would this be the best, worst idea ever? And we're like, yeah. And so being quarantined, we're all kind of going nuts, and then we're like, I'm obsessed with the Tiger King. And then I mentioned to both of them, I'm like, could this be our new best worst idea? And Joe's like, oh my God, yes. And then Michael's like, I haven't seen it, but I'm like, okay, you have homework. And then he's like, oh my God, yes. So it just turned into this bigger thing than we thought it actually would. So, because we're actually working with PETA on it, so which is kind of a neat thing to do. Yeah, that's actually kind of cool too. So we're happy about that because they're giving us information that we did not know that is not in the Netflix series. So it's actually kind of neat to be part of that. And I think this is one of the first interviews that, if Joe does come on, I think it's the first interviews that we've actually done together.
Oh, cool.
I think that's
after
right.
All these years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
We
usually do them separate. So this is great.
Oh, I like this. I want to get to the PETA thing in a second, but I did want to first ask. So Tiger King came out on March 20th, and the book is coming out in June. That's correct. How did
correct,
you,
June 24th.
We're recording this on April 19th. How did you come up with it? How did you write this and draw this and everything so quickly?
Quickly is the relative term. this was actually 2 weeks ago that we started actually working on the project, and I am I have finished edits on half of the book at this moment. The other half I should have to Darren by Monday or Tuesday at the latest. It's just a lot of work, right? My job has transferred from being at the university in my office to being at my home. And so now all of a sudden I'm trying to balance, you know, hundreds of students and at the same time do my writing on the side, my side hustle here. And it is a lot of research. You know, you get the research together, you start kind of coming up with an idea and a voice. And I do a lot of test writing where I'm trying to find the right tone for it, because I don't want to do the same thing Netflix did, because why would I do that? I wanted to do something different. So the research is pretty deep. And when PETA came on board, and I know Darren's going to address that, but they changed the dynamic for part of the book. The whole thing's a flip book. So the first, you know, half of the book is Joe Exotic. And then when you flip it to the other side, it's, you know, Carol Baskin. So the whole idea is you should be able to read them no matter what side you start with, and then kind of get to understand them when they finally get to clash. And so that was a struggle. I don't know what made me think that would be a cool idea, because it's actually made it a lot harder to figure out where I wanted to put it and then how I wanted the characters to sound and what I wanted to get out of it. And I can tell you that the Joe side was a lot easier to write than Carol's side. And it just gets crazier. And it just, well, once they really meet, that's when things go nuts, right? And so I was trying to think, what would a prequel look like? What are pre-Joe and pre-Carol like? And then what happens when these meet is what happens in the Netflix show. So let's do something different. Let's have some fun with this and see where it goes. And I sent the first half yesterday, and I feel like is a little more poignant than I expected it to end up. I mean, I was shooting for kind of a voice for Joe, and what ended up happening is that I'm afraid that readers are going to read and go, damn, I feel sorry for him. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But the PETA stuff, like, and I'll let – yeah, go ahead.
I feel like that's his play, where he wants everyone to kind of feel bad for him, but he knows exactly what he's doing. But
I agree.
That shit crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think they're all pretty – if you own big cats, you all pretty much are big, crazy.
I mean, this guy's life, though, is like a series of bad choices that he somehow made money out of. It boggles my mind.
The real American dream.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. It is the real American dream.
Yeah,
and definitely during this quarantine time, we thought to ourselves, like, what are we going to do? And so I'm like sitting here, updating all the e-books I've ever done, and just doing all this stuff. And I'm so wasn't feeling really creative. And then all of a sudden this happened, and I'm like, I'm creative again. So it's been really great to be working on this with them. So
yeah, that's a really good point. It really did help with that. Yeah, it really did help with the creativity. I hadn't even really thought about that, Darren, but you're right. I was kind of languishing in here just answering emails and pushing students to where they needed to be. And then when this project started to kind of spin out, I started feeling a lot more creative. Now I'm anxious to get to the next project.
It was either, doing this or doing a COVID comic book. And so we opted for this. So
might be a little too soon for that.
Yeah, I know. Is it, though? No, I'm kidding. I wouldn't. Yeah, I was like, there's no way I want to do anything. Because we try to do things that are timely. We try to do things that are that. And there's no way. I mean, I'm going completely. We are, like, super quarantined here. We have a quarantine club that, you know, I now have sister wives that literally live. They're our neighbors, and they're the only people we see. And they, because they work from home, we work from home. And so it's literally we've sequestered ourselves with this group, and literally we're all this is normal now. The Tiger King seems normal, so
boy, that's a truth.
It's true.
I'm teaching from upstairs in my comic book geek room, and my wife is teaching her classes downstairs from our dining room, and we meet for lunch and we meet for dinner. You know, but the commute is great. I can say that, but it's just the weirdest time right now.
Yeah, I'm not getting any of my podcast listening as I used to before with no commute, but, you know, can't complain rolling out from bed in pajamas to the living room or the office to do work.
Yeah, I'm in my kind of glad right now we're doing this by phone because I look like a troll doll. Cause I have that
hair. Oh, I would not put anyone through a video call.
Yeah, I think I'm in my I forget if I'm in my daytime sweats or my nighttime sweats. I so.
It's all becoming one thing at this point.
Agreed.
So, circling back to PETA, taking a little down. So you tie in a lot of information about the cruelty of these roadside zoos. How did PETA kind of inform you? And you also mentioned that they kind of hijacked the story a little bit. How's that been?
So when I was watching it, I saw that PETA was part of the Netflix show, and they were also part of the TMZ did a show that was on Fox Broadcasting. And which aired, I think it was like Monday or something like that. It was like behind the scenes of blah, blah, blah. And so, and I saw that PETA was involved with it. So I reached out to PETA, who I've had a relationship with PETA for probably a good 10 years. One of the things that people probably don't know about us is that, you know, you have in a comic book, you have 22 pages of content. And so, and it's 28 pages. So we've sold ads, but we also give ads to nonprofits for free, as long as it fits within the book. And especially if we do biographies, we'll usually have the subject, we'll reach out to the subject and we'll ask them who they would like us to support and that type of stuff. Like with Ellen DeGeneres, we did the Humane Society, and, you know, with Barbara Walters, we did some Bipolar Foundation. And so we've done a lot of those. And so with this, and somebody introduced me to the head of PETA and the national PETA. And so I've had a really good relationship with them. And so I've actually done a couple campaigns for them where they've hired us to do illustrations for, I think it was like for Comic-Con, we did something against like the big sea animals and stuff. And then we've also done, you know, like Naked in Fur and that type of stuff. And I'm not, I agree with some of PETA stuff. When I had a meeting with them, I was wearing leather shoes and I felt bad. But, you know, you have to you pick and choose what – yeah. And so I have – yeah, and so, like, there's certain things about PETA that, yeah, I'm not, like, 100% on. But this one, totally, yeah, I don't think people should be cub-holding. And they taught us more so I reached out to them and I said, hey, do you guys want to be a part of this? We'll give you guys two pages in the book and you guys can talk about, you know, cub holding and why that is actually bad for the animals, and talk about what you guys talked about in the Netflix series, but actually expand on it. And so, and it made me kind of understand Carol a little bit more, because I just thought from the Netflix series that she's this awful person, and they're all pretty awful, to be really blunt.
Thank you. Yeah, they are.
They're all pretty awful. But one of the things that we learned is that what the Netflix series did not show is that when Carol is having people come to her zoo and all this type of stuff, they don't say where that she gets her animals from, and they're basically dumped off by, you know, other roadside zoos. They're dumped off by, you know, circuses and that type of stuff. She's not breeding them. So, and the other we learned, and what was the other thing we learned was, when she had people at her zoo, she doesn't, you know, she's not like cub holding and doing all that type of stuff. What did they do? They raised $30,000 for some like South African zoo something or other, and that's going to be in the comic book too, that it wasn't just like, hey, come to my zoo and pet animals and do that. She doesn't let people pet them and that type of stuff, which is where I kind of understand. Do I think her husband is in one of the tigers? Probably. I, you know, that would be my guess, But as for, like, I'm not going to say that one way or another, but my
sure.
guess, so.
Yeah, you know, and I live about half an hour away from a tiger rescue here in Missouri.
Mm.
So I got some information from them. PETA helped kind of inform Carol because, like I said, she was the harder character to create and write for the comic
mm-hmm.
to try to figure out what makes her tick. The whole purpose of these biography comics was that when Darren approached me 6 years ago when we started working together, it was like, these are not meant to, you know, put your spin on in a way that where you convince people that this is the right way. You know, when we do political comics, I don't want people to know whether I'm Republican or Democrat, conservative or liberal. I should be writing mm-hmm. these in a way that lets the reader decide. And so ever since then, every time we do one of these, I take that approach. The research for this one was a little bit more intense. And when PETA came in, it kind of unlocked a little bit above Carol for me. So it is making this a little bit, taking a little bit longer to write her side of it, but it is definitely making the character a little bit more realistic for me. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. She's definitely like, she's definitely no Joe Exotic where it's, you could, you know, pin him down. She's more like aloof. She's kind of, she's harder to read almost. Like, what's her play in a lot of things?
Well, there's a lot of passive aggressive going on there, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of aggressive too.
That's hard to demonstrate in any meeting, in any medium.
Right.
Well, you know, we're trying to, it's a tricky thing to write because not only do you want it to be interesting for those who've already seen the show and are totally addicted to it, for those mm-hmm. who haven't seen the show but might be interested in it, you want to kind of get their interest. And then the other side mm-hmm. of this is you want it to be open and accessible enough to comic book readers who are a completely different group altogether and then find a way to make all that work. And I think that's why I like working with Darren is that he gives us a lot of freedom to kind of explore and figure out ways to do that. And then you bring in an artist like Joe who always takes it up a notch for you and really makes it look good. And then the artist that he got for one of the covers from Portland, good grief. I mean, this guy is going to make the book look good no matter what I do at this point.
Oh, yeah, we're working with so I actually met Jesse. Jesse did the cover with the tiger. So if
I
you look at the,
that one.
Have you looked at it close? Because there's all the characters of the people on
is
the tiger.
Really?
Yeah.
I just keep getting, like, Notorious B.I.G. vibes from it, and I was just, like, astounded by that. I'm going to have to, like, pull it up and take
a Yeah, take a look at it. It's a $100 bill, and it's all the people, because it's about making money from these tigers. So it's a $100 bill in the tiger with all the characters in it. And if you look at the tongue, Carol's is the tongue.
Oh,
right.
My God. That's
so
awesome.
Notorious
B.I.G.
Yeah, so Jesse is Jesse's really great. I said I've known him for a little while, and his art, you know, during this quarantine thing, I didn't know how great of an artist he really was, and so I saw some of his artwork, and I ended up, like, it was like, hey, support local artists, so I bought a piece of his, and it's just amazing, and then he did this, like, just a piece of a tiger, and I'm like, oh, my God. And so I'm like, can you do this and 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 this? And so he added the earrings, added the crown, and made it into the Tiger King. And so it really – he's great. He's a model, too, which I hate.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. Every time we have to do a video thing, like, really?
Yeah, he's a Nike model. I'm like – and I had to do an interview with him, like a video interview with him. I'm like, oh.
Some people just have it all.
Yeah, I know. Jerk. And he's like the nicest guy, too, which is the best.
He seems really just chill out. Yeah.
Yeah, he's totally chill. Totally chill. So.
Well, that's amazing to hear. And I can't wait to actually, like, when I get off this call, I'm definitely going to take a closer look at that. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah. It's a great cover. So.
Yeah, so speaking of all the other people. All the other characters in this story, who else makes an appearance in these books, in the book?
I've been afraid to kind of talk about that too much.
Okay, no problem.
I will say this, the other owner, the new owner has an appearance of the new owner of the zoo. And then there is Joe's first husband.
Oh, makes it
with,
okay.
With teeth or without teeth?
That might be asking
depends
too much.
On how Joe draws them all, I guess, right?
With his new teeth and his beard, and I'm not saying his wife. I'm just calling it the
right.
Beard.
Shirt
yeah.
Off,
oh,
shirt
nice.
Off.
Nicely done.
I know, this thing has gone, it's super weird. It's just, you know, a lot of people are, I'm surprised at, like, the press that we're getting from this, too. And also, mm-hmm. like, we got some backlash press. Some, you know, there was some, yeah, there's a WCCB in Charlotte, North Carolina. They, and I'm kind of, like, pissed at this one. So, usually, like, like podcasters or journalists in general, you know, podcasts, yeah, you can have an opinion, that type of stuff, this type of thing. But, like, journalists that are reporting the news, that are on the news, should not have mm-hmm. opinions. And so they're doing, like, this back-and-forth banter, and this one reporter, or she's the anchor person, she kind of dismisses us. And she goes, uh-huh. yeah, okay. It was, like, super dismissive. So, actually, I'm starting a Twitter war with them. So, because I just think it was, like, yeah, I wrote on their thing. I go, isn't it your job as journalists to report the news and not offer commentary? If you were to read the entire press release about what we're doing, maybe you would not have such a snarky comment. Your anchor is dismissal and extremely offensive. But then you also – they have subtitles on this piece. And I go, also, mm-hmm. if you're going to have subtitles, use spell check. And if you can't afford an editor, because I counted for mistakes.
Oh, shit.
And this is like, yeah, this is like CW. Yeah, this is like the CW CBS News in Charlotte. So I'm like, bring
Darren
it.
Darren never.
I just got tired of the COVID news that they had to, like, find something to pick on.
I know.
Right?
I'm like, yeah.
Well, Darren never gets this way. I mean, I've known him for 6 years now, and I've never heard him go, you know what, this kicked me off. I'm done. I'm going after him.
Yeah, because it was literally this one anchor, and it was like, they're like, it's enough, like the article was something about, or the news
yeah, it
piece
like,
was
enough
like
enough
basically, yeah, enough already, new plans for a Tiger King comic book. And I get it. That part, I get. That's fine. You can take that stance to it. But when the actual anchor itself is dismissing us
yeah.
with like a, okay, you just sit there going, shut up. Like, you know, if you have some, if you're interviewing Joe on the street and Joe on the street, hey, are you sick of Tiger King? Yeah, I'm so sick of this or blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, whatever. Yeah, I get that. But it's even like when you watch the news or CNN, Fox, or whatever, and they offer their own little commentary to it, it's not journalism. So
yeah, it's like the information itself should, you know, give the audience enough to inform their own, you know, decisions
exactly.
and how
yeah.
to feel about something.
And she just totally dismissed us, and I was just like, what? I'm like,
It's especially crazy because you think of, like, you know, everything being shut down now, everyone's turning online, and so many artists, musicians, et cetera, they've all, like, you know, come to the forefront where, like, art is the biggest thing. You have, like, Andrew Lloyd Webber, who's, you know, posting his shows for, like, 2 days on his YouTube
right.
channel, and everyone's raising money. And it's like, you think of the arts who have been, you know, cut funding the past couple years, and everyone's turning to the art now. It's kind of like, why you got to pick on it when you need it so badly right now?
Right, except for comic books, because you can't buy them anymore. Or
right.
you can't buy them through Diamond. And I do feel bad for comic book stores. You know,
yeah.
They're not an essential, according to the world. But there still is online, and we've embraced online comic books since literally day one, my company has. So, you know, when Comixology first started, I mm-hmm. signed up with them. You know, I've been doing this for 20 years now. I've been doing fiction, nonfiction, and a combination of both.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so I've embraced the digital world. I believe that Diamond Comics has a monopoly on the comic book market. It's I'm not the most popular person to, when I say stuff like that, but I left Diamond 10 years ago, and now I'm with Ingram, so, you know,
meh. Yeah, I mean, it definitely, not to go too far in there, but, like, you know, when they made their decision, it definitely, you know, so many people, you know, their lives changed because of it instantly, so it's definitely a new water to navigate, especially in the industry that already was, you know, on shaky legs at times.
Yeah, back in the 90s, okay, comic books sold, what, 9 million copies? Now the top-selling comic books maybe sell 100,000. So,
that's right.
So it's like you got to look at the marketplace, and that's why when we started doing these biographies in 2008, you know, they started making a splash, and they started doing something. And now, they get attention. But we still do fiction books. It's just the nonfiction ones seem to really get the national attention.
Yeah. I heard a ding off. Is that maybe Joe?
Joe?
It is.
Yes!
Yeah, Joe.
I had some minor minor technical difficulties, but I got in. I didn't want to cut you off mid-sentence. How is everybody?
I'm excited. This is our first one all together.
How we doing, guys?
Good. How you doing, Joe?
Doing well.
Good to hear. So we've been talking for a little bit about the book and the comic industry as a whole, but now we can actually talk about some of the art more. We did have a question if Joe Exotic's first husband was with or without teeth in the book.
Oh, man. I mean, this book is right up my alley, man. I mean, I'm a cartoonist first and foremost, and I mean, mm-hmm. You watch this TV show; these guys are walking cartoons. This is Tex Avery, man. This, I mean, Joe Exotic is like a redneck meth head Yosemite Sam. I mean, it's just you can't. I mean, this stuff kind of almost draws itself. I mean, the cover. You've seen it by now, and I mean that came together. The sketch came together in under 10 minutes, and you know, once I finished it out and got it colored in, but it was just like I just sketched something, and it was there, and it was perfect. And I have a really good feeling about this book because it's just gonna. I mean, this is a cartoon waiting to happen.
Joe, did you really use the Crayola to do the cover?
Yes,
that is
you're amazing.
Crayola markers are the only thing that can withstand the abuse that I put onto these things.
Oh my God! So you know the Crayola markers that like they're just like Crayola markers.
Yeah.
It's like that's what he uses to draw. It's so, and I saw that for the first time.
What?
He posted the picture of the Tiger King cover that he did in the inks or whatever you would call it. And I was like so shocked, thinking, wow. So you even impressed me more.
Wow, thank you.
That's
I mean, the first couple of books that I've done were all digital. Everything was all, you know, I didn't have any paper or anything like that. I just did it all on my tablet on my computer. But you know, the tablet just kind of went bye-bye. And so I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to have to take this a little more lo-fi. And I'm like, well, I've been a caricature artist for the past 15 years, and I just go out to, you know, events and weddings and things like that, and I just use Crayola marker on 11x17. I'm like, you know what? I'm doing this in Crayola. We're going, lo-fi style. And aside from this, when it's done, I'm going to have actual concrete drawings and not just files on a computer. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, that's incredible, and I think the last time I picked up a Crayola marker was elementary school, and I don't think anything could give away.
I can't praise these things enough. You can get a nice broad line if you have a light hand. You can get a really nice thin line. You can really do anything you. I mean, I used to buy these like $25 red sable brushes and dip them in the ink and go through all the stuff that they would teach you in cartoonist school and all that stuff. And, you know, yeah. Then I realized fancy art supplies were for posers, and I just went to the Crayola.
I love it. I'm surprised you don't use marks. I would probably use marks a lot if I was an artist, because I'd be like smelling them all day. And so.
Oh, well, yeah. That's the other thing. In fact, I started using Crayolas. I don't know if you've heard of Bruce Blitz. He's a little minor TV celebrity out here in the Philadelphia area. Had a cartooning show for the longest time. And he actually had some pretty serious health problems that came from using those old markers.
Oh, wow.
No kidding.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, like the fumes got to him. And so now he's like, you know, everything he does now is, you know, all non-toxic. And he actually, you ever try using the Crayola? And you know, we've been using them ever since.
That's great. Mm-hmm. I am wearing a Phillies hat because of you today, by the way.
Awesome. That's great.
That I'd support.
So on the topic of the art side of the book, what can we expect with Joe Exotic's outfits? I mean, that actually seems like it really would work well with Crayola markers, too.
Well, all I can, you know, we can use what we've seen already just off of the show. We can use as, you know what to expect, and I'm just going to stay faithful mm-hmm. To what's out there.
I want. We need to have him in that teal outfit. So teal tiger outfit. I want that personally. Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's happening. So, I promise you.
Okay, good.
I promise you that's happening.
That's cool. Page 12. That's the perfect spot for it.
Nice.
So, Joe, when you I kind of asked this earlier, but. Since you just recently joined us, when you began collaborating with Michael on the books, how do you find that you work together? What is the process like?
I think we have a really good rapport with each other.
Mm-hmm.
He does a good framework, and I've got he doesn't overdo it. He gives me a good framework to build on, and then I can kind of embellish as I see fit. Sometimes, if it works as a paragraph, it doesn't work as a graphic situation. So if I, you know, adjust things, he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't get upset about it. It's all about what works best on the illustrated mm-hmm. page, and we have a good working respect for each other, and I think it's a really good partnership.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I'm not a visual person like he is, and so I do what I can to kind of mm-hmm. give a framework and then get out of his way.
Yeah. Do you find that sometimes you maybe mold the story over some of the images that you see back from him? This is actually the first time I think I'm talking to a writer and an artist, so it's kind of interesting to me to see how the flow of the project goes.
Well, I think that kind of you'll have the. I mean, I'm kind of imagining it from a writing standpoint that you'll imagine what it'll look like finished,
mm-hmm.
and you'll kind of write to that.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. most of the time it works. And,
right.
You know, it's like, okay, I want this set up. I want this over here. I want there to be a, you know, and you just have a couple of the elements that you absolutely have to have in there. Mm-hmm. And you know, and then you'll set it up, and then you'll give it to the illustrator, and he'll handle the rest of it. And most of the time, it works like that. But sometimes it's just, you know, you think you see something in your head, and then when you express it in text, it doesn't come across the same. You mm-hmm. know, so you kind of so then it comes to me as the graphic person, as the designer to. You know, arrange these things that'll make it more easy to understand for somebody who's just reading this for the first time.
That's right.
You know, hasn't seen it before.
As somebody
yeah,
that works
you're
with
telling
both
the
of that.
Yeah, you're telling the story in so many different ways. Not only are we telling it with text, we're telling it visually, and we're telling it with color, should we choose to do that, mm-hmm. or the black and white tones if they choose to do that. You see what I mean? There's more than one storyteller trying to tell the same story, and it gives us a lot more depth.
Yeah.
So as a writer early on, I think I was trying to control the page too much. And then I started realizing that I wasn't, the panels that I was envisioning weren't really working well for the artist to play with. So then I started to less is more. Give them just what they need. Get out of the way and then be happy and surprised, because in the end, I think I described this in one of our podcasts, Darren, that I always feel like I'm the guy with the drums in the band, and the singer is the artist. Get out of the way of the lead singer and just make sure that he stays on beat. That's it.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, they have to be able to trust each other, and a writer and an artist, and they have such great trust. And so anytime I get to work with both of them together, I'm so excited. It's just like, when we did the Stormy Daniels thing, it was so much fun to see, seeing the script, because I'm a visual person too, seeing the script, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is great. And then when you see the pages, you're like, oh my God, it's so cool. So I'm just like sitting on pins and needles waiting for pages to come in now. So.
And this
is that
definitely
what you said
one
to
of those.
Tight deadline?
No, with the deadline for this one, I kind of think you just have to hit while the iron's hot on this one. So
yeah.
I was ragging.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that it's also kind of like the Stormy thing. It was one of those. Yeah, it's just such a pop culture moment. That you really want to make sure that you hit it, and it's fun for people.
Yeah. Darren has a knack for this, because I think one of the first times I was shocked at how the timing worked out was the Trump comic a few years back.
Oh, yeah.
Because it hit right before the election, and I tell you what, my phone in my office blew up from the craziest places, because the timing couldn't have been better. So he's got a pretty good eye for, this is where we're going right now with pop culture. Are you guys on board?
My background, I used to work at E! Entertainment Television, so I learned a lot about marketing and I worked in Lionsgate, and so I learned how to, really understand timing. And I guess I will say it as a skill set that I kind of know. Because I don't want to – I've made mistakes in some of the comic books that we've done, and some of them, you want them to be evergreen. You want them to stay around for a long time. So somebody will still pick up the Hillary Clinton comic book. I think – Joe, is that the first one we did? Was that – no.
I think the very first one was it was Rand Paul.
Rand Paul, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the first one we did together. Yep.
Yeah, so – And especially during around the election time, you kind of have to think, and you have to be really quick, because people are going to drop out really quick. And so, there's certain people in this election who we're actually doing, and we're still going to keep doing them. We're still doing a Pete Buttigieg comic book. We're still doing, a Camilla comic book, because I do think they're going to stay relevant afterwards. And it's usually Democrat heavy this time. And in 4 years, it will hopefully be Republican heavy. So just like it was 4 years ago, it was Republican heavy. We did Jeb Bush. We did Rand Paul. We did a Hillary one. So we did different people. So
yeah, it worked out. And I mean, these people, they'll keep their stories keep coming up. And just as like Joe Exotic's story will keep coming up as,
Well, we're going to announce this soon anyway. So we're redoing the Stormy Daniels comic book. So we're adding extra pages to it, because the story with that, it's pretty interesting, is that so we did, and this is one of those timing things too, is that we decided, Joe and I think it was, and Michael, let's do the worst best idea ever. And I think it was Joe that actually said that. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And I was kind of scared of her a little bit at the time, because Michael Avenatti was just so litigious and all that type of stuff. So we just made this book, and we did this book. It came out right, I think it was either the week before or the week after her book was coming out. And so we hit, our timing was, right on spot. And
couldn't have planned it
better. What?
Couldn't have planned it better, really.
It was so good, yeah. And so all of a sudden we start getting a lot of press on the Stormy Daniels book, a lot of press. And then the calls started coming in. I got threatened by her manager who I learned at this time was her boyfriend, or I know now was her boyfriend, and like literally threatening me at like 7 a.m. And I don't deal well with threats. So I'm like, oh, so I called my manager and I'm like, oh my God, help me. What do we do? What do we do? And then that night I see Michael Avenatti on my phone and I'm like thinking, oh, it's probably just his assistant. And so, I go, hi, this is Darren. He goes, yeah, this is Michael Avenatti. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh, my God. And this is like right, well, he's like, oh, he's on CNN and Fox News. I'm like, why is he calling me? And so I'm like, and I was like intimidated because I was kind of a fan just of like the pop culture-ness of it and talking to Michael Avenatti. And so I'm like, well, he goes, well, Stormy Daniels is, you know, not a real name, and so we have the copyright on that. And I'm like, no, you actually kind of don't have the copyright on or the trademark on it. You only have it for dancing. And it was, like, super weird and super – and he's like, well, And then I go, well, you know, I know you want to run for president, and, you know, it'd be really great to do a comic on you. And so he's like, what? Okay. And so I called Joe, like, that night. I'm like, Joe, do a cover for me, please, right now. And so we did it, turned it around, and never really heard from them again until a year later I get a call from the guy that threatened me, and he goes, well, we kind of want to work with you now, and Stormy wants to work with you. And this is after Michael Avenatti's now in jail and or was – whatever it was,
when we first heard from him, all of the stuff that he had been doing hadn't come to light yet, so he was still kind of a good guy in public eye.
Right.
He was looking at he was still kind of a white hat at that point, but then, you know, by the time that it came around again, we had found out about him, and it was like, oh.
Yeah, and so because then all of a sudden they called us back, and so then I ended up getting to talk to her on the phone, and then she actually invited she happens to be probably one of the coolest. I'm trying to think, famous people I know. So she because I don't know, celebrity, yeah, but she's one of the coolest people. And then so we came up with this idea to update the comic book and then re-release it and also get Wounded Warriors involved with it and run an ad with Wounded Warriors. So that book we actually pushed back to the end of this month because just with everything with COVID and all that stuff, we just didn't want to release it because we were going to release it on March 17th for her birthday. And so we ended up getting to meet her. And or I got to meet her, and I got signed copies for the guys of the first comic book. And then so Joe and Michael updated it, and we added to what she's doing now. And so she's going to totally promote it. We're also talking with her about doing a second project. So, yay, Team Stormy. I'm like, we love her.
That's so cool how you, like, reported on that story and then became part of the story.
Yeah. And she, truthfully, is funny. If you get to see her comedy show, she is hilarious. She'll answer any question that you have. And then we got to spend, like, an hour with her afterwards, just, like, hanging out, drinking. And she's just funny. And she's actually she's more stunning in person than she is in any photo I've ever seen. She just has this presence, and she is drop-dead gorgeous. So...
Wow. So, you know, you're releasing that book later this month. When does the Tiger King book come out? End of June, I think?
Yeah, June 24th, I think, is when we're...
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure if I'd seen a date. I knew it was June, but that's so exciting to have these things to look forward to, especially because everyone is grasping for, like, new reading material or new, you know, something to watch, and there's only so much you can revisit. So I wanted to close out because we've been speaking for quite some time, and I wanted to first thank you for all joining me in from your little quarantine hut, wherever you're hunkered down across the states. So my final question is, who is your favorite person in the Tiger King, I guess Tiger King universe now?
I will say the tiger. I feel bad for them.
Yeah.
I got to go with poor trusting Saf.
Oh yeah, that's good.
That's a good choice.
Trusting to a fault, dedicated to caring for the animals, and you know, gave up a hand and all that stuff. You know, and again, sees the good in people even when it really isn't there. And, you know,
did you see how they got that wrong?
That's a good person.
Did you see how they got his sex wrong in the documentary?
Yeah.
Unfortunate. Hard to see.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they corrected it, though. I mean, either, you know, too little, too late, but at
right.
least they called it to attention that, you know, that's something that you have to do now.
I think they released the other episode, I think, yesterday, where it's Joel McHale talking
to
the
guy. That was last Sunday. We watched it.
Oh, last Sunday?
We're quarantined. Trust me, we watched it.
Oh, my God. No day makes sense to me anymore.
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank you again so much.
Well, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And stay home.
Yes. Nothing to do outside anyway.
You could train your cat. You could play Tiger King at your house.
Yeah, that I can do.
The home game.
All right.
The home game.
Have a great night. Be safe. And I still look forward to this book coming out in June.
Thanks so much.
Great,
Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Appreciate
bye, guys.
It.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Talk to you later, guys.